you know, for me, in this permaculture movement and in the herbalism movement, there are no gurus, there are no masters. You know, there's maestros and maestras, mm-hmm. like there's teachers, but we're not masters of anything. Mm-hmm. It's like we're all students. And that's what every ecosystem is for us, is the teacher, the great teacher.
So the question is this: how do regenerative-minded change makers like us, who are creating projects designed for environmental wellness, social equity, and the security of future generations, accomplish our missions in ways that maintain our ethics without leaving us struggling to survive? This is the question I designed this podcast to answer. Welcome to Regeneration Nation Costa Rica. I'm your host, Jason Thomas, and I've been exploring innovators around Costa Rica to discover what they're doing to contribute to a regenerative nation. Join me on the journey as we explore who's doing what to bring us toward carbon neutrality and prosperity in a new world that prioritizes regenerative agriculture, business models that value the eight forms of capital, communities designed for local resilience, and government initiatives that prioritize the well-being of the people as well as the planet. In today's episode, we hear from Sarah Wu, a highly respected permaculturist and herbalist living and teaching in Costa Rica. I sat down with Sarah while at the Envision Festival earlier this year to learn about some of the regenerative initiatives the festival's implemented as part of its mission. Envision is a multi-day music festival with several stages and thousands of participants. By day, the focus is characterized by consciousness-raising workshops and presentations on permaculture, community building, yoga, wellness, embodiment of the divine masculine and feminine, and honor of indigenous ways. All this is presented with an overall theme of mindfulness and play. By night, the arena becomes flooded by a secondary population of partygoers enjoying the multitude of talented DJs and musicians playing on Envision's many stages. You can find everything from electronic music to jam bands to local folk artists to a static dance on the padded yoga stage, my personal favorite. The experience can be overwhelming for some, and advice should be heeded to pace yourself, hydrate, and definitely wash your hands frequently. The festival brings with it a significant impact on the local town of Uvita, both in the ways of a boosted economy as well as occasional exhausts of some of its more limited resources. Like with all things in life, there exists a dichotomy that the festival producers have worked hard to bring balance to over the years. In our interview, beyond sharing details of the thousands of trees they've planted on site, their extensive composting system, the no single-use dishware policy, and the education programs that Sarah's initiated through the Village Witches program, we touch on the reasons why Envision isn't using composting toilets anymore and what future solutions might look like. One of my favorite parts of the interview is when we trail off into reflections around valuing each other's different niches in humanity's ecosystem. Early on, Sarah briefly mentions the work that Envision has supported off-site through the nonprofit organization Somos el Cambio. At the end of this interview, I'll share some highlights to give you an expanded view of their impact. Sarah is a high-level activator embodying the role of a humble servant. I really hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and happy today. Welcome back to Regeneration Nation Costa Rica. My name is Jason Thomas, and I have the pleasure today of sitting with Sarah Wu, one of the co-founders and co-producers of the Envision Festival, which is where we are right now. If you hear a bunch of background noise and music and other hollerings and whoopings and fun stuff, that's because we're at the festival right now. Sarah is also a founder of Village Witches, which she's going to tell us more about. She's doing some really exciting educational projects with Village Witches, and she is a resident at Taco Tall, an eco village outside of San Jose near the Central Valley. So, Sarah, thank you so much for taking time to carve away from the festival and all you're doing here to share your story and the evolution of the festival with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you everyone for watching. Sparkles aren't normal attire.
I contacted you because Envision has come back awake after the COVID close. Yep. And it is so much better than ever. It's really apparent. I mean, I haven't been here since 2015. So I was part of the first five, including the Village Witches with you last time I was here. And coming back now, I get to really see the maturity of the festival and the organization and the real attention to detail
detail, in those small things that make it a regenerative festival. So I wanted to get you here to tell our listeners who may or may not have heard of Envision, of a little bit of its evolution and where you've come from, some of the rough points, and how it's really becoming a regenerative event.
Yeah, thank you so much. So for those of you who don't know, Envision Festival, we started in 2011 here in Costa Rica, up in Dominical, a little bit north from where we are right now, at a project that is now called Danyasa. It was back in the day bamboo yoga play.
Yeah,
remember? So some of the original founders, Brennan, Sophia, Jeff or Tom, and another handful of us, we were nine original founders, members, I guess, of the project. And, you know, we wanted to throw up a really good party. We also had this idea of bringing the Burning Man concepts down here to Costa Rica.
And for those that aren't familiar, can you share that?
Yeah, I mean, so ideas about, like, you know, radical self-reliance, which I have my own concepts about, radical inclusion, you know, and also, like, the kind of music and the style and the, you know, this kind of a vibe that we're experiencing up there in the Black Rock City Desert. You know, we had that idea, and the very first one was a 800-person party, which was really fun. It was hard work. We did a bunch of different things. I mean, all of us kind of fulfilled different roles during that one. I was working the door. I was cooking food. I was doing plant walks. It was just all over, you know. And then the following few years, we had a different site, and, you know, it was, I think, let me see, we jumped from 800 maybe to about 1,300 people, and then to like to 1,500 people, you know, very, very volunteer-based. I mean, without the volunteer hands in this event, like, especially at the beginning, we wouldn't have been able to do anything because, you know, for those of you folks who've ever produced events or produced parties or whatever it is, it's a huge financial investment, and wow, it's hard, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of volunteer work. So thank you if you're watching this and if you've ever been a volunteer at a project or for an event or for Envision, like, you really helped to make things happen. So thank you for giving us your energy. So yeah, we were like 1,300 at that point, two stages, you know, a little art gallery, some vending stuff, some healing spaces, you know, and we had a tree that we were doing workshops under. It was the root down tree, right? And that actually became a stage, which isn't here this year. It ended up becoming dissolved this year, but that stage from pretty much 2012 until 2020 existed, and that was the first stage that we had, teaching regenerative permaculture and herbalism, and I was doing plant walks there too. And then we kind of decided that that festival site was not ideal. We had to, I don't know if you remember this, we had to like go through this kind of a scary river up to like here. You know, we really wanted to have like a beach party, and so, you know, that wasn't quite working out.
It was
so
a bit
well.
Of a trek.
It was a trek. Yeah. And so we ended up then finding this land of Rancho La Merced that we're on right now. And this land was cattle pasture. It was really quite ideal because there were like internal roads right on the beach, you know, the asadero, like the workshop, like the wood shop of the family that owns this land, you know, like there's just a lot of things, a big area for parking, for camping. And so it just kind of checked off a lot of the boxes, you know, that made sense for us for hosting an event. You know, there's so many moving parts to producing festivals. You know, it's like you see like housing and stage design and safety and all of the branches from safety, right? And all of the different branches and fingers and hands and blood and sweat that go into like creating the stages, and then the food, and then the like the relations, artist relations, you know, guest services, like parking, all the permits, like there's so much. It's actually mind-boggling to think about, like, you know, the amount that needs to happen and the size of the team too, you know, that needs to come together to make these kinds of events happen. So in 2013, we had our first Envision here at this site in Rancho La Merced. It started to grow very organically. I think at that point we're at like maybe 3,000-ish people. The next year was like at 5,000. And then in 2000 and, 15, we sold out for the first time. And selling out for the first time meant that we hit a number of, I think it was like 8,500, wow. something like that. Our max capacity at the site is 10,000. And we really want to keep it like that because it's enough that like you can find your people, you can find some space to be, you can find your like home. You know, it's like if you've ever been to some of those huge events. I was at Boom Festival last summer, which is a gigantic event. They celebrated their 25th anniversary. It's in Portugal, and it's a 55,000 person event. And I mean, it's like a small country. It's gigantic, you know, or if you've been to Burning Man, or if you've been to Glastonbury, or like, I think Lightning in a Bottle is also huge, you know, or Coachella or something. It's really easy to feel lost, you know, and I love Envision because at this number that we're at, you can find your people. And so that's what the site allows for. And it's also what we want to be able to handle, you know, in that still kind of considered boutique-ish. Some of the other evolutions for us has been just the work on this land. So this was cattle pasture land, you know, a part of our ethos. Outside, you know, we use the word sustainability, but because it's kind of a word that people know, but it's, you know, it's a little bit of a greenwashing vocabulary word right now. Yeah. It doesn't really mean so much anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, to be sustainable means like to do the bare minimum to get by. Regenerative is what we're trying to do. Sustainability is actually the result of regeneration, you know. So on the site, for example, you know, there were things like... If when you're here, you'll see these trees that we're looking at right now, which are they're called poro, which is like a really beautiful nitrogen fixing, many decade living tree that makes this like little orange flower that like rains down on us, which were kind of used in this cattle pasture as like a. Like for pasture for grazing, like the markers where they would have like the fence lines, that you'll see a bunch of old palm trees on site, some other native species, some strangler figs, and some of like the beech almonds and cecropias, like some of the pioneer species popping up here. But the site was a pretty open area. Mm-hmm. And so we started actively planting trees here when we got on site. So in 2014, we started planting. We've put over 7,000 trees on this land in particular, wow. from fruit trees to native hardwoods to other trees like the ylang ylang, which is this like fast growing, kind of a weedy tree, but it right away provided shade. For the humans here. Banana plants, maybe you can see some right behind our screen here. We have the beech almond, which is a naturalized species, which, you know, creates these beautiful canopies, also grows pretty fast. You can hear the macaws in the background, maybe. It's food for them. I'm looking at a water apple and a mango. Like, so we really did a lot of land investments, as well as some physical things like an infrastructural, like road and helping with create, you know, some of the bridges over these riparian air pathways right
makes
here.
Makes a huge difference.
It makes a huge
having,
difference.
So people aren't tramping through that delicate area.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because we have these like ecosystems. So riparian ecosystems are these like waterways, right? And I mean, you're going to see like ibis and tiger herons, ibises. I just noticed roosting right over there in that tree.
In one event, those could just be eliminated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, their ecosystems are actually pretty fragile. So if humans are like stepping through that, you know, it's delicate. And so there's also like a lot of tree frogs and caiman and turtles. And so it's really quite amazing, you know, monkeys, macaws, parrots. I mean, there's so much going on in this ecosystem that it's like this lush forest when we're not here. And we come here for this week every year. But, you know, we all are also here building and the jungle is pretty intense. So we've done a lot of regenerative land works here in particular, which also the owners of this land, the family has really appreciated, you know, because they
see
that benefit,
you
know, the wildlife coming back. And again, those native hardwoods, which is like future investment, and these fruit trees, which are going to feed people for generations. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's been really big for us, and a very like point of pride also for me to see that happen. And working with our friend Federico Gutierrez from, he first was with a project called Costas Verdes, and now he is with the Envision nonprofit Somos El Cambio. And just in 2020 alone, he planted by himself 10,000 trees, and the whole goal was to like bring volunteers in. But then of course we had the great shutdown of the world and he wasn't able to work with volunteers, and so he had to plant them all himself, and he did that.
Wow.
So, you know, it's been interesting that way. And then, you know, for as a regenerative festival, some of our other really important philosophies is to minimize the impact of trash on site. And so we have a very extensive composting system. We don't use any plastic or paper or compostable plastic cutlery or plates or anything like that. So we have a really extensive dishwashing system. And what we've estimated based on the number of people here, based on like rough estimates of like, you know, drink consumption or meal consumption, we're saving over 500,000 pieces of just plates and cups.
No, that decision, it's I can see it everywhere. I love it. It was one of my favorite things when I like made the decision to come and I started looking at the orientation, the rules, whatever I got the, in the email. And I was like, they went all just bring your own and no single use.
No. And I think saying 500,000 pieces, and that's just plates and cups, is actually being very conservative.
Sure.
Imagine like forks, knives, and spoons.
Sure.
You know, and those things, a lot of times the plates and cups in many events are paper or they're that like phony compostable plastic.
Yeah.
Which, just so you know, folks, that stuff isn't truly compostable. Like the facilities aren't there to break it down. If you put those into a regular compost system, we're not hitting that temperature. Like they need special facilities, you know, and a lot of times those things just go into trash bins. So it's a shallow ecology marketing concept, mm-hmm. you know? So even if we had that kind of stuff, it's still like trash, mm-hmm. really, you know, and we do so much with like beach cleanups and tree plantings every year. And so that does feel really good.
Yeah. It was a powerful statement, powerful decision to make. Yeah, I'm really inspired. And so all the compost from the massive amount of food scraps that gets produced here, that all just processes right here on site and feeds the plants on site? Or?
Yeah, so I mean, it's massive composting. So there are eco teams that are working on that. Some of our biggest struggle is actually the coconuts. And so mm-hmm. coconuts are a critical food source to stay really hydrated and well, mm-hmm. but they do have their other impact, you know? Mm-hmm. So last year we were able to find someone who was able to come in with like a massive truck, haul it away. And like one of the things I was talking to our ops crew about, which we will probably come back to because everyone's just like so slammed, was maybe biocharring it. If you're not aware, for those of you watching, biochar is this really cool concept. It's like making charcoal. But what we're doing is it's through pyrolysis, which means, in my accent, paralysis, I don't know, pyrolysis, which means that we're creating a oxygen void environment with the fire. So you actually start the fire on the top mm-hmm. and it creates this like vortex within it. And so you actually don't see like carbon smoke coming off of it. You might see a little bit of like a gas and then it creates charcoal, you know, a specific type because you actually stop it at one point. Mm-hmm. You cut the fire.
You get it hot enough. Burn the nutrients, but not so much to burn the carbon.
Correct. And so then you have all this surface area, which then you can inoculate with things like mycelium or with mountain microorganisms, which is a type of bioferment that can feed the plants, or you can use it in bioremediation and leave it like open. So some of you might know it as like activated charcoal. If we're taking it internally, if we're working with it in the ecosystem, it's called biochar or like living charcoal.
That sounds like a cool solution.
It could be a really cool solution, yeah. But the amount, we'd have to get a bunch of people out there with a big pit, and it's hard work making it, you know, because we don't have in Costa Rica massive furnaces right now, mm-hmm. but I think it could be a nice solution for the coconuts.
Yeah. I interviewed Justin Dolan at St. Michael's Permaculture Country Club, mm-hmm. and he, when I had gotten there, he had just dug in a huge pit and just loaded it full of wood scraps. It was a massive pit, and he loaded that full and then
biocharred it,
and he just put it on fire and then covered it with palm leaves and sand.
Yep.
And that helped it stay hot, have a little enough gas or enough mm-hmm. air to keep going. But and then after he harvested all the biochar, he filled it with wood again and made a hugelkultur bed.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That's cool.
That's another option too, is we could hugelkultur it, which is a really great salute. For those of you who don't know, hugelkulturing, it means hill culture, hugelkultur. Every time I have German students, they always like chuckle at my pronunciation of hugelkultur. They're like, it's not how we, there's an umlaut or something over it. But the hugelkultur, it means hill culture, and we're actually like digging down into the earth, usually a minimum of 2 shovels deep, and then we fill it up with compost and wood and small logs and leaves and green leaves and scraps and all these things. We make like a compost lasagna, and then it eventually is breaking down, and it's a self-feeding garden bed, you know, for months to even years, depending on the ecosystem. Here in the tropics, it's usually like 6 months and it's like flat to the earth. But it's a really great technique for areas in the tropics because we don't have a lot of topsoil here. You know, it's very shallow because of the amount of rain that comes through. And so hugel culture is an awesome option. And yeah, that could be a good solution, actually, mm-hmm. those coconuts.
Hey there, fellow visionary leaders, retreat hosts, and community builders. I got a special resource for you. Are you managing a project that has communally used spaces? Would you like to enhance their sense of harmony and clarity for both members and visitors alike? The Community Living Agreements training is for you. Discover how to craft agreements that enhance interactions, reduce conflict, and build a stronger community spirit. It's not just a rule book you'll be creating, it's a living document that makes your project a joy to interact with. Head to regenerationnationcr.com/CLA to access the recordings. To save 20%, use the coupon code podcast. Again, that URL is regenerationnationcr.com/CLA, and the coupon code is podcast. Sharing communal spaces is better with clear agreements.
Let's talk about the bathrooms.
Yeah,
when in the early days, you guys experimented
toilets.
With the compost toilets.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that was one of those split politics of some people determined to make it work and some others were like, we can't try this anymore.
I know.
Tell us a story.
So compost toilets, for those of you who aren't familiar, which you probably are if you're watching this, it's Regeneration Nation, right? So I'm assuming, making an ass of you and me, that you know what a compost toilet is. For those of you who don't know, it's a dry toilet. We're eliminating water waste by pooping and peeing in fresh water and sending it off into the ecosystems or into the septic. And so when we're working with dry toilets, instead of flushing with water, we're flushing with a carbon source. And so it could be sawdust, it could be wood chips, it could be cardboard, paper, et cetera, et cetera. And what we're creating is a closed loop system, right? And so instead of sending the nutrients off somewhere else to be processed or to pollute ecosystems, we're actually keeping those nutrients in the ecosystem and creating the surface layer, like the humus layer of the forest, right? We're creating biological soil, also known as compost. So in that, it was an awesome idea. I think the limiting factors is pee, actually, because urine is what creates excessive nitrogen in the compost.
And you therefore need so, odor.
Yeah. And you need so much more carbon to accommodate for the nitrogen input from urine, uh-huh. you know? And so when you're peeing in the compost toilet, they get smelly really fast.
Yep.
And you'll see that ammonia, you know, becomes quite present. A lot of water and liquid, and so keeping up with the sawdust is one of the bigger issues with mass gatherings in compost toilets. Another thing with compost toilets is digging holes in the ground is not a compost toilet. That's a privy.
Right.
Right. Or the outhouse or the shitter type of a thing. And so when we dug this trench just to help to accommodate for the amount of poo and the amount of pee, the risk in that is the water table, you know, in that like we are on the beach. If the water table and the rain gets too high, off season, not when we're here, but like in that off season, if there's not composted well in there, it can contaminate the water table pretty easily, because when the water table hits the compost or the privy or the outhouse, it can actually travel 50 meters
right.
horizontally.
That's no good.
Or 15 meters down. And so if there's a well close by, it's a really high risk. The other thing with that, with mass gathering, besides the carbon source, besides how do we actually deal with all of these humans and their bodily fluids and waste coming out of it, was the legalities of it. And so technically the compost toilet is not legal in Costa Rica. You can get away with it in your home, you know, you just kind of don't put it in the home plan, you know, but once the projects get kind of big and things, and it's a mass gathering where we're hosting people and you need to have health permits, the health department doesn't quite get it, you know. And so what happened in 2016, I think, we still had a compost toilet. We did have some of the porta potties as well, just to accommodate for the festival growth, for the population growth. But what happened is we actually had a malaria case, and it was someone who traveled up, I think, from either Peru or Ecuador. So Costa Rica, we don't have malaria,
uh-huh.
right? Like the country's very like intensely proud and also very meticulous about making sure that people who have it are isolated and that it doesn't spread, because it's debilitating to a population and
sure.
people die from malaria. You know, like when this person, it was a festival participant, they came into the country with it. Again, they traveled, I think, from Peru or Ecuador. And what happened was that the herbal clinic was seeing this person. This is when we had the herbal clinic. And so we're treating these like intermittent fevers, starting to question, is this dengue, right? Like, what's going on here? We couldn't get the fevers under control. The medic couldn't get it under control. No one really got what was going on. And so this person ended up going to the hospital in San Isidro and testing positive for malaria. The Ministerio de Salud, which is our equivalent, if you're watching this, of like the CDC, right? Like the Ministry of Health. Of course, gets red alert to that. They came to the festival site and bombed it with insecticides, specifically targeting mosquitoes, right? Because they don't want those potential mosquitoes that are the vectors of malaria
to propagate
Yeah. It's a big risk for the country. You know, for when that, and of course, we can't prevent that. We didn't know, you know, and so municipality of Uvita said, it's fine. You know, talked them into it, it's fine. But then once the Ministry of Salud nationally came in, bombed the site, they look at that and they're like, what do you have going on here? Not okay. Uh-huh. Type of thing. So we shut down the compost toilets. And actually, like, when I look at a festival of 10,000 people, I don't actually think it's doable, but there are options that are doable and they're called ecozoic toilets. And I saw these in action at the Oregon Eclipse Festival, which is a 50,000 person event, as well as a Boom Festival, mm-hmm. which is also like a 55,000 person event. And these ecozoic toilets are so cool. They're a dry toilet, but what they do is it's like raised up. They have a little fan and it's this like proprietary blend of microorganisms that are mimicking the forest floor that are here. And then the pee goes through it into like a big collection chamber. And so you're pooping, peeing. There's an airflow with the fan that's like keeping the urine kind of dried out. So it's getting rid of like that ammonia. And again, letting the pee move into this other chamber. And then, like, your poop is gone in a matter of hours. It's consuming it. And it's really cool. We had this presentation, because I taught a permaculture course at the Oregon Eclipse Festival. This was in 2017, by the people who developed these toilets. It's this guy, I can't remember. He's one of the, like, main operations guys at Boom Festival, as well as this other guy, Scott Whitaker, who has an event called Building Man. I think it's in Utah. You can correct me with that one. Check it out. But so they built these toilets and they designed the whole thing. They gave this really great presentation to our permaculture course about it. They're talking about like the code browns and, you know, all the explosions they're having trying to make them like work. Cause it was like their first real, you know, trial at an event that big. And they worked really amazing. They were always super clean, you know, thanks to the team who was like taking care of like the human mess that happens. But the toilets themselves worked really well. And seeing them at Boom Festival with 55,000 people was incredible. And Scott Whitaker was telling us about how at Building Man, they were advertising building these ecozoic toilets. He gets a call, you know, and ended up being the health department being like, you can't have those at a mass gathering. And he was like, hey, why don't you come check them out?
Uh-huh.
You know, because these are really cool. Representative comes and checks them out. And now they're in like the parks in Utah.
So
he saw that they actually work. Right.
So
and
good.
So that's one of the things that we would really love to see. At least for me, I would love to see the ecozoic toilets like uh-huh. installed down here. And so the porta potties.
And what do you think the biggest obstacle is to making that happen?
It would have to be, we'd have to show, you know, like some statistics and paperwork. That's just
right to the Costa Rica government. That's the big thing is getting it permitted
because
you've already
gathering.
And you've already been tapped on the hand for
right.
your
having those compost toilets.
Okay. Well, one step at a time.
Yeah. But right now we have the porta potties, which aren't my favorite. You know, they're pretty mm-hmm. gross.
Yeah.
But we could do better.
Sure. All right. Any other ecological or regenerative like mm-hmm. highlights of how the event's mm-hmm. produced?
I think. I mean, we do work really hard to. You know, Costa Rica is so great because there's like local food is like the whole country. The country's so small. So it's really easy to like work locally mm-hmm. with folks to bring in, you know, really high quality food. There's a lot of like farmers out there that we make contact with, you know, to produce that way. You know, some of the things that I'm really proud of that I brought to this festival ecologically was the Village Witches Project.
Yeah, tell us more about the Village Witches.
So Village Witches came out of the broom closet many, many years ago, but I had the idea to bring this concept to the festival specifically through the lens of, like, herbalism and how do we, like, present herbalism in parties, you know. And so we created a few different things. One of them is like the elixir bar. So I really love that because, you know, it's like human beings, we love going to the bar, right? It's how we socialize. It's like you go to the coffee shop or you go to the bar and like, what are we doing when we go to the bar? We're like drinking alcohol and we're getting, and there's nothing wrong with like consuming some alcohol, you know, but how often have you had these like great conversations that you can't remember, you know, or you wake up just like wrecked the next day because you're like drinking so much, you know? And so we wanted to mimic that bar experience because it's like how we're accustomed to socializing, but replacing it with these concepts of elixirs, right? And they're getting more and more popular. I brought the first one in 2015 also. And it was like this like little thing and people were into it, especially people who were practicing sobriety or people who were kind of like hip to herbalism a little bit. And now they're like getting super popular, which I really love. And so an elixir is a functional beverage that's non-alcoholic, right? So, but we're mimicking the cocktail. You can call them mocktail. It's a little like, you know, elixir sounds so much cooler. And so like the elixir is that functional beverage. It's beautiful that it's tasty and that it's supporting things like your adrenal glands, which is like fight or flight. It's the stress, cortisol, adrenaline, epinephrine, all of those kind of things that like make us like anxious and run ourselves, you know, like coffee, for example, that's what you're getting when you get that like coffee charge is you're just like putting yourself in a fight or flight mode. Taking things instead like reishi mushrooms, you know, to support the adrenal glands, but to also like really nourish the immune system and the digestive system, or, you know, tasty nervous system tonics or things like that are going to be a little bit like peppy, you know, like having like yerba mate in it, or, you know, again, like some of the medicinal mushrooms that really give you a lot of energy, you know, without having to, you know, kind of wreck your body at the end. So a lot of the concept of the Village Witches was because I'm an herbalist practicing now for 23 years, like I wanted to bring herbs more into our lifestyle, you know, and not just being like on the edge over here only when you're sick, but like really looking at like, how can this be a part of my festival experience? Also like cacao, for example, you know, like mm-hmm. everyone loves cacao. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a way to like also kind of like,
oh man, I had an iced cacao elixir yesterday. So good, it set me up just right.
So yeah, good.
So
you know,
good.
They keep you going.
So good.
Heart opening. You can like connect and whatever. So I love that, you know, having the elixir bar experience here. Now we have two, you know, where we had this like little one in the corner. Now we got like their two features of the event, which is really beautiful.
No, and so the Village Witches is offering the herbal elixir bar and
we have a stage
where you're educating, which is some great lineup.
Thank you.
And then you've got the body work area that you're organizing, the spa.
Which is body work, energy work, as well as like a beauty bar. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, you know, it's not original like Lush. Maybe some of you have heard of Lush. Like now it's this like big mall brand that has a lot of like swaggy kind of artificially scented products. But originally Lush was like a salad bar and they would hand make the products. You had to keep everything in the fridge. It was really a beautiful concept that they must have gotten some big investment that, you know, put them in the malls and it just shut down like their original ethos. But so we kind of mimicked the original Lush there with having like the fresh herbal and fruit-based scrubs and foot baths and that kind of, you know, to take care of your skin and to cool it off. A lot of people are also dealing with a lot of like sun rashes and sunburns, and so we brought that in just to freshen you up too. It's sweaty and dusty, you know. And then for 5 years we also had the herbal first aid clinic, and that was amazing. We didn't have it back this year. There's various reasons why, but this, you know, previous years that first aid clinic was a student-run clinic. Not student run, it was a student clinic that was run by professional herbalists and medical doctors and nurses. that we're trying to show that herbalism has a place in first aid, you know, and we treated over 2,000 people every event. We graduated about 125 students from the program. It was a 40-hour training prior the week before and then 40 hours on site. So an 80-hour clinical program.
It's legit.
And so, yeah, it was legit. And so what it really did was it helped people to learn how to do like pop-up relief work and to bring herbs into that and show that like we can help with musculoskeletal issues, with trauma, with soft tissue, with fevers, with digestive, you know. And we had our bumps at the beginning, especially the, like the kind of conventional medic, we're kind of felt a little territorial. What are you guys doing here? And then they saw that we were super respectful and that we were here to help, you know, and to bring relief and to create safer spaces. And what happened through the years is that medic would be bringing people over to us. They would come over themselves to get treated, you know, because there's a lot of limitations to allopathic medicine, mm-hmm. you know. It's like there's only so many Tylenols you can take, you know, mm-hmm. only so many like anti-diarrheals, you know, when it's like people really need nervous system tonics and they need, you know, just sometimes anti-inflammatory topical things to help heal their skin. I mean, there was so much that we were doing, but I'd say the team got a little burnt and didn't always, there was a little internal support that didn't come from that. So
people stuff.
Yeah. But it was a great project, you know, for those 5 years, and we'll see, maybe it'll come back. And
sure.
A lot of people are asking like, where's the herbal clinic?
Sure.
Type of a thing,
new
you know?
Iteration.
And right now we have the apothecary instead. So the main lead, her name is Lala Palmieri, and she's an herbalist from Guatemala and a permaculturist, botanist, and a biologist. And she was leading that for those 5 years. And now she's running an apothecary here and, you know, working with her brand and other local Costa Rican herbalists. So they still
awesome.
Got their thing going on.
Great. And then it's on the stage. Mm-hmm. What kind of people do you get on the Village Witch stage?
Yeah.
What are we talking about
yeah.
this week?
So at the Village Witch stage, we usually talk about traditional and alternative healing modalities. A lot of like kind of top name herbalists. And Costa Rica is a great place to practice because,
uh-huh.
you know, we're, you know, when I ask my students, like, who here's grandparents gave you herbal medicine? And it's always the Latinos and the Asians that put their hands up. You know, a lot of us that come from like North America or the EU or something, it's been so removed from our reality. You know, so we're trying to bring it back, and we're in such a renaissance, and here in Latin America in particular with practicing. I'll have to say the World Health Organization is amazing for this because they set the standard that people have the right to practice their traditional medicine. And so for countries that are technically in the global south, even though Costa Rica doesn't feel like the global south, and it's very developed, we are still mm-hmm. in that. Like, we have a right to practice. And I love that because we're in this, like, gray zone and also like in our rights to be here, and it's very accepted. And when you talk to like medical professionals and veterinarians even in this country, like they're super open to it, you know, and they're not like, oh, that's bullshit, you know, like
yeah.
some of the doctors in North America may say
yeah.
to you. But people
well,
are
they're
more
they're
more
very few generations removed from that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, here practicing, you know, we will feature these herbalists, you know, who have done a lot of the groundwork, they've been in it, clinical practitioners, you know, folks who are writing, you know, and teaching, but some of the bigger voices, you know, out there who are giving, you know, that voice, you know, to the plants and the people together and everything. So that's really exciting. Like last year, for example, we had Paul Stamets, which was like a big highlight for us. You know, he's one of the leading mycologists like globally. He just had a mushroom named after him, Stemetsi, like a psilocybin Stemetsi or something like that. I just
yeah.
saw. You know, this year we have this woman, Abril Donea. She has a project called Beauty Herbs and Tea, as well as the Black Girly Farmer. And so she's an herbalist out of Atlanta who is giving a lot of voice to the traditional medicine out of that way. We have Adriana Ayales this year, who is the founder of Anima Mundi, who's a Costa Rican mm-hmm. herbalist. In the past, we've had like Rosemary Gladstar and Brigitte Mars and Seven Song, who's one of my teachers. If you don't know, you should check all of them out. They're just Mimi Hernandez, who is the director of the American Herbalist Guild, Susan Leopold, who's the director of United Plant Savers. So like a lot of you know, people who are just...
It's so powerful, Sarah. You created a stage
and
you called these heroes together and these folks come into the festival, get the blessing of being able to soak it up. It's really... It's just awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. And outside of the festival, Village Witches is still a brand. It's still something you do more, a lot of your education through.
Yeah, it's my like kind of personal brand. I really love also that we can identify as witches now, which is a spiritual path, right, and a lifestyle. Also getting really popular and people are awakening to it. You know, we're all coming out of the broom closet and it's really exciting. But predominantly through the Village Witch brand. I do a few different things with that. I'm a teacher first and foremost. Like that's my heart, my biggest heart's calling is to teach. And, so I teach permaculture, regenerative philosophies, through the lens of the herbalist. And so really looking at like, what is this earth body relationship? And so learning how to grow the plants, the therapeutics of the plants, learning about the ecosystems that they come from, really trying to localize our practice a little bit more. That was one of the big things the pandemic opened up for me, was that folks were a little bit too reliant on imports. And looking then, like, look at this materia medica, this materials of medicine, this apothecary that's like all around us. And actually I had more work through the pandemic than I had in many years prior, because people were like, I need to know what's here because we're locked down here, type of a thing. So it was really fun to educate people through that. And then I teach another permaculture course called, I do the foundational PDCs, but I really love kind of seeing how permaculture is evolving, you know? So I've been teaching a course called Soul to Soil, and that one is a PDC for personal development. So it's really helping people to kind of find their personal niche.
Awesome.
And that's a 125-hour course that I'm doing, mostly in Portugal right now with a friend of mine, Eduardo Tercides, who will be speaking in Envision. And I did another one, permaculture for social activism, and I taught with Ryan Rising, who's another permaculture teacher here. He does like eco-social action. He was one of the founders of the Permaculture Action Network in the U.S., if you're familiar with him. But I really love, and then permaculture for the herbalist path is the big one that me and Lala teach together. And that one we're doing mostly in Guatemala right now. It's where she's from. We really want to give, you know, spread things around, you know, in our student body, but also in like how we're, you know, spreading the abundance a little bit to different projects. And I love working in Guatemala. There's the government's so unreliable that it really gives a lot of force to people to create grassroots projects there, you know. And so permaculture for the herbalist path is regenerative herbalism 200-hour program that we developed, which is using, again, the foundation of the PDC, but branching it out into human anatomy and physiology, into our materia medica, into herbal therapeutics, into medicine making, into farming practices and gardening practices and community action and all that. It's really an amazing program. So, you know, as a teacher, that's what I'm focusing the most on, is like, how can I get more people trained and outworking? And I just think it's like, I look at my students around, I've got a lot of them here, and seeing their projects that they're doing, and it's just like, it's so much pride to see what's happening.
Yeah, really not only touching lives, but influencing the way other people touch lives.
Yeah, and you know, and I always say, and this was actually, it's not original. I took it from my teacher, one of my first teachers. I've had many teachers. He, first day of class, his name's David Winston. He had a school called Herbal Therapeutic School of Botanical Medicine. That's where I did like my formal, you know, many hundreds of hours training with him originally in like 2004 to 2008. And he said, if I'm your only teacher, that's a problem. Uh-huh. And I believe in that too, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I really love seeing my students teaching and being with other teachers, because, you know, for me, in this permaculture movement and in the herbalism movement, there are no gurus, there are no masters. You know, there's maestros and maestras, mm-hmm. like there's teachers, but we're not masters of anything. Mm-hmm. It's like we're all students. And that's what every ecosystem is for us, is the teacher, the great teacher. And as we're moving into these different ecosystems, and as like things are changing so drastically around us, I mean, we're seeing it. Climate change is so fiercely happening. And watching these shifts, and it's like it just gives us this opportunity to humble ourselves and be students, like mm-hmm. in every step that we take. And it's mm-hmm. it's pretty awesome. And it's also like in these events, like just getting to be a student and learning from like what's happening and how are people interacting with the world and each other, and how can we just keep learning and doing things a little bit better every day, you know, and every opportunity that we have for producing something or creating something, you know.
And, you know, we were talking earlier, there's all this that we do as, you know, teachers, mentors, consultants, to share what we've learned and learn through the process, right? And we're all in it together. We're all a piece of a lineage. We're a particle of the passage of information. Each one of us, even the most, you know, exalted masters, are also generally just another particle in a long lineage of wisdom. And we, you know, those of us who are ambitious, entrepreneur, co-creator types that want to, you know, do everything we can to influence, you know, the world outside of our little bubbles. And we live in this world where there's just so much going on. Yeah. There's so much that we can't touch, no matter, despite all our efforts to make the most eco-friendly festival that all everybody's going to love and exalt and hopefully take what they've learned here to go plant trees at home and offset the what it cost for the plane to burn fuel to bring them here, and that they start to wake up and get it that, you know, all of our decisions play into the chaotic puzzle of our influence over, you know, the life around us. And it's a really powerful thing what you guys have done here. It's really, really beautiful as I listen to all the, you know, the young people here coming, and like, I've heard people ask each other, you know, what do you want to get out of the festival? It's like, I don't know, man. I just want to learn. I just get it now. There's a lot of kids here that are here to party and have a good time. Yeah. And there's a lot of people really just here to humble down and learn, because we all know that the chaos that we're all working to bring harmony to, you know, to harmonize with what we see as our regenerative practices, you know, we're all trying to play our part in this co-influence movie.
Yeah.
There's only so much we can do.
And I think that's where it's important to figure out what your personal niche is.
Yeah.
Right? Like, for me, in this philosophy, right, through permaculture, it's like the forest is the model, right? And the forest is perfect. There's no waste in the forest. Everything has its role, its place. And it's interesting you use these words like influencers or leaders, whatever, because it's telling us that we should all be canopy trees, right? Or we should all be like that keystone species that everything depends upon. But the reality is that not everyone is that. And we have to find what your personal niche is in there. Maybe you're the vine, you're the support species. You know, you're that nitrogen fixer, or you're that one, that pollinator that's coming through, you know, and touching that specific fruit tree or that specific, you know, other little plant over here. You're that little like humble weed that's holding that soil together. And I think that that's what's so important, is that people in this, with these experiences, kind of realize, I don't have to be the canopy tree. My life is just as critical to the survival of this ecosystem.
As a ground cover.
As a ground cover.
Yeah.
You know, as an epiphyte, as a vine, you know, or as a predator out there. And that's what's squirmy, right? Uh-huh. When we try to use that forest model to see like those parasites and those predatory species are actually really critical to forest survival. And I think like in our human metaphor of that, or like the ones who really kind of challenge, you know, or like who take a little bit too much and trying to set that boundary and help them, you know, to see like, you know, like, is this equitable right now? And what is this reciprocal relationship? And what do we have to learn from each other in those experiences, you know, because the forest is about reciprocity. And I really hope that as people come here in these ecosystems, and as they're learning, is like, how can we identify a little bit better what our niche is, and how we interact in this forest environment together?
Yeah, you know, and when we can find our place in that ecosystem, we can understand our connections better.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, and it's that's one of the big challenges, you know? Like, we talk so much about, like, circular governance or horizontal governance. And I've been like meditating for years just on how can we have like a forest style governance, you know, and what would that look like?
Yeah.
And that's a part of what we do in Soul to Soil is I'm trying to help people like identify your niche in this ecosystem to kind of, because when we go through these like leadership conferences and we see influencers getting all of this like, you know, like attention and stuff, and it's because they're a canopy tree, you know, and somehow that canopy tree is getting so much airtime right there, but like everyone else needs to get some play too, you know. And so I don't know, that's what I think about that a lot is like, how can we give more voice to the ground cover? And how can we give more voice to that little bromeliad who's like, you know, I'm a whole ecosystem right here. Unto myself, you know?
Yeah, I really see that backstage being on the in the staff camping, you know, and helping out as I am this year and interacting with the people who've been part of the build and the the people that have painted hundreds of signs that painted 50 gallon barrels with the words basura and garbage and putting projections up to paint the stencil of that sign that needs to be around in 50 different places. Like,
you know who they are? They're mycelium.
Yeah.
Because they're conveying information.
Yeah, there you go.
We would fall apart without them.
Yeah.
Just like and the soil structure would fall apart.
And then you got the people in the discotheque, you call
it? Yeah, discoteca.
And the discoteca that are washing all the reusable cups and dishes. And they're just, they're their own community of super happy contributing people.
Yeah.
And the whole staff area, the way that Envision has it set up right now, where we have our own dining hall, there's our own showers, there's our own internet, there's the whole thing is set up. Yeah. There's a protected camping where it's just, and there's a whole nother sub community. There's a sub festival happening on the side back there. Of like, I don't know how many people are in that camp, 1,000, 2,000?
I was thinking about it today a little bit. Gosh, I mean, just for example, like I'm in the, I fall under like the production branch. We're 340 plus people. Right? And then it's like, that's just one branch.
Yeah.
Of this tree. And so I think, I'm going to give it like a rough guesstimate, but I would say maybe like 1,500 to 2,000 people are staff, volunteers, talent, right?
And
talent.
That was the size of your third year's festival altogether.
Oh, I mean, volunteers alone, there's hundreds and hundreds of them.
Yeah.
You know, every little branch is just like all of these like folks on it.
That'd be a really fun exercise for you to map out Envision gathering,
right?
Ecosystem, people ecosystem, from the chefs to the security and safety team to the teachers and presenters,
the little pieces of trash,
picking up the trash, to the visitors and all the different types of visitors that come through here, whether they're here because they're in the wellness circle or they're in the party circle or they're in, not to isolate that they can be one or the other, but you know, the community building, the medicine circles, there's all these like circles of attendees as well as, you know, presenters and facilitators. Yeah, I know the event is staged in a way that that exercise could actually be effectively done.
Yeah,
that would be cool.
I'd love to see that. The big tree, the big family tree of a vision.
I love it. Aw, Sarah, I'm so happy we had this time together.
Yeah, me too.
Before we go, let's share with the listeners or viewers how they can find out about Envision Festival and about your work with Village Witches or your teaching programs.
Thank you so much. Yeah, so envisionfestival.com. A lot of people use like Instagram, right? So it'd also just be like at Envision Festival. You can find us there super easily.
Yeah.
We got a really beautifully built website. We've actually got an app this year, which was a big feat.
I love it.
Marketing.
It's a good app.
Wow.
It makes it easy to organize the event and what you want to do.
Yeah.
It's got a nice calendar.
Map, like everything. They did such a great job. And then, of course, like the social media, you know, you can find it. A lot of cool podcasts like this one, Regeneration Nation, YouTube, your YouTube channel, right? There's so much. There's like Jai Dave. We've got our Ethos Project now, which is an educational platform that we've launched with Envision. So you can also check that out if you want to find more with like our speakers and presenters. And then Village Witch. So it's a villagewitch.org. is what I was able to get. Villagewitch.com is taken. but yeah, you can go there to or Sarah Wu with an H, W-U, .villagewitch.official, because I actually have a little scammer out there who keeps trying to do readings for people, which is not me.
Okay.
So, that's what happened.
That's the Sarah Wu Wu.
Don't even look at them. The two T's, witch. But no, it's Sarah Wu right there, .villagewitch.original for my Instagram. But yeah, through there, and then also just villagewitch.org, and that's where you can find like all the links to different projects and,
uh-huh.
and to all my teaching and everything as well. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Give us a last bit. Right now we've got people watching on YouTube and listening in their cars maybe, or as they're out there with their headphones on digging ditches in the rain, or whoever's listening to this, wherever they are, like what's your message? What's your message for people to get involved with the regenerative movement, no matter where they're at?
You know, I mean, there's so many things. Wow. For that, I think one of the biggest things is to really keep yourself open and aware, you know, like really, really, really informed about what's happening around the world. We were talking about this a little bit earlier, you know, and we get so attached to some of the things that are the problems of our privilege. And I think it's really important to stay really informed and deeply empathetic to what other people are dealing with. You know, like there are people fighting for their lives right now. There are people who are being severely oppressed right now. And there are people who are being deeply bullied by the system that, you know, like in our movement, I feel very powerless, actually, to make systemic change, but I feel very powerful in situations like this. And so I think the more empathetic and kind and humble we can be to the suffering of the world, to the suffering of our ecosystems, to the suffering of communities outside of ours, you know, to the more gentle we can be on ourselves also through that, but really like saying like, you know, like taking your problems a little less seriously when so many folks are suffering, you know, like I think that that's really important, because, you know, in a part of regenerative herbalism, it's like if the planet is suffering, we will never be well. And the planet's the people as well out there. And so, you know, like being in your practice and doing the best you can, like for your own human body and your own human experience, but also doing the best you can to help other people, because it's only together that we're going to survive, you know, and it's only together that we really thrive. And that holds really deeply for me. So keep yourself really informed, you know, about the realities of other people's human experiences out there. And, you know, yeah, that's my biggest feeling right now.
That's perfect. Yeah. Thank you. That's a wonderful answer. Yeah, I feel that. I take that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, everybody, for watching and for supporting Jason and Regeneration Nation and for all the other projects out there that are doing this work. Thank you. Thank you.
Right there. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
See you on the inside. Playtime.
And on the other side.
All right, there it is. Now you know a little more about what Envision's doing to improve the impact that a festival scene can make on a community. Festivals of this size are here to stay, and they can prove to be a life-changing experience for many people. After so many years, you can really feel the sense of community that's developed among its annual attendees. At the same time, many festivals can get a bad rap for the negative impact that comes when so many people converge on an area for a short period of time. While the convergence has a temporary impact on wildlife, for instance, it's worth recognizing that the food forests of this music festival were previously nothing more than cattle pasture. Their internally organized dishwashing system diverts hundreds of thousands of plastic waste products from the landfill each year. That's impressive. The Village Witches program has cultivated a culture of well-being amidst a party scene, bringing herbalism to the mainstream. That's also something worth celebrating. The festival's also done a lot to bring hundreds of jobs to the local community before, during, and after the event. They've also done a lot of work over the years to harmonize the ecosystem of the festival production, staff, artists, attendees, volunteers, and other influences. What we didn't cover in the interview, however, was what Envision's nonprofit foundation, Somos El Cambio, continues to do for the neighboring region. With the leadership of Federico Gutierrez, Somos El Cambio has planted over 17,000 trees directly by Envision staff and volunteers, and over 80,000 more trees with Envision's support. They've donated $18,000 worth of medical equipment to the local hospital in Ciudad Cortes for COVID relief efforts. $7,800 has been donated to the Uvita Community Food Bank, a foundation in charge of identifying and distributing food to local families in greatest need. More than 4,600 trees have been planted with the local water board to protect the springs that feed water to all of Uvita. 8 monkey bridges have been built through a cooperative alliance with the Electrical Institute of Costa Rica. They've donated $17,000 to fund local water system upgrades, and over 30 tons of trash have been recollected during cleanup activities nationwide. Many thanks to Sarah Wu for sharing time with us to help us understand some of what goes into orchestrating a regenerative-minded festival. Visit the show notes on our website to catch the links of the different resources that Sarah shared with us. If you'd like to catch a glimpse of some of the workshops that took place at Envision, I recorded a few of them that are up on the Envision Festival playlist on our YouTube channel. Among them is a panel discussion on the challenges that can arise in building eco-villages. There's a talk about decolonizing permaculture, along with other interesting bits. If you're new to Regeneration Nation Costa Rica, subscribe to the podcast to stay updated about future releases. Give the show a rating and review while you're there. You can also keep up by joining our email list through our website, regenerationnationcr.com. That's what I got for you this time. Now go out and be the change you want to see in the world. Hey there, hope you enjoyed the episode. Are you stewarding a land project and hosting guests? I've put together a unique tool for you, and I'm giving it away for free. If you'd like to create a virtual tour of your farm or retreat center, my virtual farm tour guide is a step-by-step companion to showcasing your space in a whole new way. From choosing the right software to crafting easy-to-follow narratives, this free guide simplifies the process, ensuring your guests enjoy an immersive experience, whether you're home or away. Visit regenerationnation.com/VFT to access this free resource and start your virtual farm tour journey today. You've got a beautiful place. Let me help you show it off. Again, that URL is regenerationnationcr.com/VFT.